and welcome to the Impact Lab podcast. So we are going to be reviewing July's What the F Did AI Just Do? All the crazy stuff AI did in July, from Grok going on an anti-Semitic meltdown, Google's 50% of its new coding written by AI, and YouTube demonetizing purely AI content. It's been another wild month for everything AI, and we have to start with Elon Musk's Grok. My God. We got to watch this. Grok 4, we got to watch it have a meltdown in real time, live, and it went off. So let me read the story from the Associated Press so that I get some of the facts at least. So the lead story is that the Grok 4 Mecha Hitler meltdown in the Associated Press in July, Elon Musk's ex-AI has been forced to take down its newly launched Grok 4 model after it generated unhinged, anti-Semitic, and conspiratorial content, referring to itself as Mecha Hitler. The incident, which caused a global firestorm and led to the resignation of ex-CEO Linda Yassarino, serves as a stark warning about the unpredictable nature of next-generation AI models. Well, if you don't know what happened, basically, as soon as Grok 4 launched, in X, when you know, if someone tweets something, you can at Grok and it will clarify, or you can ask it questions based on whatever it is that you're asking. And yeah, Grok just went off on anti-Semitic rants about how the Jews were controlling the US and how, you know, they were the source of wars and all sorts of things. And it was off the hook. They were going crazy. And of course, you know what it's like. As soon as someone realizes that an AI has gone off the rails, everyone dove in and started to push its limits to see what would happen. And the content that it produced was, I mean, it was horrific. No doubt about it. It wasn't just about anti-Semitism. Some of the things that it was saying was just wild. But also, it serves as a reminder to all of us that AIs are just a reflection of the data that they're trained on. Now, what I find interesting about this story, I find an awful lot interesting about this story, but let's start with the basics. All AIs are trained on a certain data set. In the case of Grok, the predominant data set is tweets, is Twitter, or X, as it's now called. And we all know that X can be a cesspool of hatred, bigotry, racism, sexism, and everything else. You know, it's called the town hall, the public town hall, the place of free speech. And that's all fine. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, ultimately, I'm an avid X user. But free speech has its downsides, right? If you're truly free to say whatever you want, then you do say whatever you want, right? So if that is the training set, is it any surprise that an AI that's trained on that data set will have anti-Semitic views, will have racist views, will have misogynistic views? Of course, it's not a surprise, not in any way, shape, or form. The second thing that I found interesting is that their solution was to add or tweak guardrails to the AI. So if you're going to tweak the guardrails, you have to sort of start to speculate, what are those guardrails? At the moment, who knows how many bots are on X? Who knows how much content is just mass-produced in, you know, content factories somewhere in order to sway public opinion on what one topic or another? So if those guardrails are, let's say, we're going to only train Grok on verified user data. Okay, well, verified user data, I mean, it's still extreme in a lot of cases. There's an awful lot of extreme content that exists on Twitter, right, on X. Extreme views, extreme opinions, racist views, racist opinions. So, again, you know, is that a solution? Is there a way for Grok to recognize things that are not mainstream opinions and weight opinions differently? Well, if that's the case, then isn't Elon Musk doing exactly what he sought to replace when he bought Twitter, which is suppression of freedom of expression? I mean, that's essentially was his argument, right? That, you know, I'm going to buy Twitter and free the bird, right? Free the bird was a reference to the fact that so many accounts were being throttled, so much content was being hidden by censorship police. And so if you're going to do the same thing with Grok, what's the difference? I don't see the difference, right? I'm not saying that you should allow Grok to be anti-Semitic and racist and misogynistic. I'm simply saying that you can't have a double standard. If you're going to have an AI on your own platform, then it should be a reflection of the data set that it is trained on. And if that data set is your platform, then you kind of like start to look at yourself and say, well, hold on, what have I created? Yeah. So, you know, I think that the third element that I just want to touch on is the thing that I've talked about in the last What the F Did AI Do, which is that AIs right now, this incarnation of artificial intelligence is just a reflection of human consciousness. There's no more. It's not human consciousness. It's just a reflection of the thoughts that happen in human consciousness. Now, a lot of those thoughts that we put in public are sanitized, self-sanitized, right? We tend to think before we speak. Unless you're on X, and then it's just a free-for-all, right? So X is like the dark side of AI. It's the dark side of human consciousness. It is the darker reflection of who we are. And as we embrace the good side, we should probably embrace the bad side too. Just knowing what it is probably enough. It's probably enough for us to be able to filter the stuff that comes out of it. That said, Grok 4 is crazy. Some of the things that Grok 4 is doing is like awesome in terms of coding and gameplay and things like that. All right, next story. ChatGPT may be eroding critical thinking. This is from Time magazine. This is a study. I don't know if you saw this study, but I'll read it out to you. Does ChatGPT harm critical thinking? A new study from researchers at MIT's Media Lab has returned some concerning results. The study divided 54 subjects, so it's not a massive data set, right? But 54 subjects aged 18 to 39 in the Boston area into three groups and asked them to write several SAT essays using ChatGPT, Google search, or nothing at all. Researchers used an EEG to record the writer's brain activity across 32 regions and found that of the three groups, ChatGPT users had the lowest brain engagement and consistently underperformed the neural linguistic and behavioral level. Over the course of several months, ChatGPT users got lazier with each subsequent essay, often resorting to copy and paste by the end of the study. Yeah, of course, right? We know that that's the case. We know that that's exactly what's happening, particularly for new entrants into the workforce. I call them prompt monkeys, right? They are just prompt monkeys. They're finding prompts, they're using the prompts, then they're copy and pasting and thinking that they've actually done something or that they've learned something or that they've added value. None of that is of value to them individually, right? And this is the crux of the course that's available now on the impactlab.store, totally free. And it's about how you use AI to not be a prompt monkey, right? If you're a prompt monkey where you're just putting in prompts, taking the content and distributing that as work, you are not learning anything. What's worse is you are literally building yourself out of a job, literally. Because in the last What the F Today I Do, we talked about Klarna CEO and the reduction of entry-level workforce. And that is absolutely the case. That's what's happening around the world, from development to design to copy to everything. You know, the entry-level jobs are getting fewer and fewer. And part of the reason for that is that AI can just do these entry-level jobs. If you want to build your career, you have to start by building foundational knowledge. You must build foundational knowledge. And what this course does is it shows you how to use the AI in the way that you're using it now, but also to build foundational knowledge. It's about building habits that will allow you to build foundational knowledge, which will in turn allow you to build foundational skills, which will in turn allow you to solve problems in the marketing space specifically, of course, because that's what the Impact Lab is mostly focused on in terms of training. And therefore build your career, right? Don't be a prompt monkey. Now, Here's another reason not to be a prompt monkey, because it's apparently rotting your brain. It's rotting your brain to be a prompt monkey. So don't be a prompt monkey. Like, build foundational knowledge. What's interesting, though, is that the difference between those who use no research tool at all and used Google search wasn't that vast, actually. Those two user groups were quite similar. So again, it just shows like the profound impact that AI is having on our day-to-day lives. I really urge everyone to like really think about... The thing is that there's like... This is a generational thing as well. I've spoken to so many people now on the podcast and outside of the podcast, and it's absolutely a generational thing. I'm in my 40s, right? So I have lived through pre-digital world, digital internet world, and AI world, right? These three major like milestones in human history, I've lived through all of them. And because of that, you know, there's a kind of mental dexterity that you have to build in order to survive all of those spaces. You are open-minded, you bring in new technologies, but you assess them with a critical eye, because we've seen so much technology not offer the value that it's supposed to. So, you know, from Sony Discmans all the way through to, you know, the latest app that's supposed to solve all your problems, we've seen it all, right? So we always view new technology with a critical eye. And when we see value, we then use it in a way that's going to drive value. And then you've got like a couple of generations lower, people in their early 20s who haven't lived through those evolutions. They were born and raised in the internet age, in the social media age. And they are at a massive disadvantage because AI has come in and it's such an easy and seamless transition. You know, that generation, they are bombarded with content around the ease of their side hustle. You know, how easy it is to have a side hustle, how easy it is to make money, how easy it is to grow a business. And that content is all curated. You know, so much of that content is nonsense. You can follow them step by step, and 9 out of 10 times you will fail to get anything like the results that they claim. But the point isn't that. The point is that it drives this sense of the ease of life, and life should be easy, and it shouldn't require effort. And then ChatGPT or, you know, Grok or Claude comes along, and Midjourney, and all of a sudden it isn't difficult. You can just ask the thing, and the thing responds. Which in and of itself isn't a problem. It's a problem when that becomes the habit, when that's the norm. If you're constantly doing that, you are literally not using AI. AI is using you. You are not working with AI. You should be using AI as a sparring partner to develop your own thinking, not working through AI. Because if you're working through AI, guess what? An automation can replace your job instantly. The moment anyone figures it out, you are instantly replaceable, right? But if you're working with AI to develop foundational knowledge, to be able to push its own thinking, using it as a sparring partner to drive its thinking and your thinking, what you're doing is you're building foundational knowledge, you're building foundational skills, you're building the ability to solve problems in so many different ways, and that's going to build your career. I go on about this an awful lot, right? And someone asked me recently, oh, so you're anti-AI. I'm not anti-AI. I use AI every single day. Every day I use AI in ways that you wouldn't imagine. I have like my Aura Ring data, it goes into a GPT. I have my body scale data, that goes into a GPT. I've got my heavy training app, all of that data goes into a GPT, the same GPT. And all of that data comes together and then I work out my, you know, my nutritional needs for the week and my lifting schedule and all of these things. I use AI in my personal life. I use it in my professional life and I use it for entertainment as well. If I'm deciding, right, what Netflix series should I watch next? I have my own chat for that, right? I've got a chat where I have long discussions with AI about why I enjoyed Breaking Bad, but didn't enjoy Better Call Saul as much. Although I did enjoy Better Call Saul, just not as much as Breaking Bad. Like long discussions about these things so that when it makes a recommendation of a program that I can watch, I know that it has taken all of these things into consideration and I'm not going to waste, you know, 2 seasons deciding whether I like something or not. All right. So I use AI all the time, but I work with it. I work with it. And sometimes AI will come back to me with information that I don't understand. You know, maybe I'm doing a project in Saudi Arabia and there's legislative changes and I want to understand the impact of that legislative change on one of my clients. And it will come back with terminology that I don't understand. Now, what most people do is they just hit copy, paste, send to client. What I do is I stop and I say, this term didn't make sense to me. Explain it to me first like I'm a 15-year-old, then like I'm a graduate, then like I'm an expert. And I sit there and learn about these terms or whatever it is that I'm trying to understand. And I get that knowledge embedded into my mind. And then I ask the GPT to create a test for me so that I can test my knowledge. And I'm doing this as a ritual, as a habit, right? So that I am working with AI and it is building my knowledge base as it solve it, helping me solve my own problems. And in doing that, I'm able to question AI better. I use AI all the time. I just use it in a way that helps me and develops me. It doesn't just help the AI and develop the AI. Back to crazy stuff AI did. So let's talk about, oh, I love this story. Right. So this is from National Institutes of Health, and mind reading AI gives a voice to the voiceless. Research funded by the NIH has developed a brain-computer interface that can decode brain signals into natural-sounding speech at a rate of 62 words per minute. A massive leap forward for individuals with paralysis. The AI-powered system translates the user's intended speech, offering the potential to restore communication for those who have lost the ability to speak. And there are lots of examples of this from the NIH study, but there's one in particular that stood out to me. It was a lady who 18 years ago had a stroke, very young when she had the stroke. She was in her 20s, and she lost the ability to speak as a result of that. And her husband and her, you know, have lived with this. And not only was the AI able to give her a voice back, they were able to take recordings of her from before when she was able to speak and create an AI that literally gave her voice back in her own voice. And, you know, watching the video of them interacting with it for the first time, it was just heartbreaking, right? It's unbelievable. And, you know, this is the good side of AI. This is the stuff that it's doing, which it's easy to overlook, right? Because the headlines that make the news are Grok going mental and things like that, because they're the salacious headlines. They're the headlines that are going to get people clicking. That's the clickbaity stuff, right? But actually, behind the scenes, AI is doing stuff which is like life changing for so many people. You know, it's improving safety, it's improving health, it's doing so much stuff that people don't get to hear about. So I want to, you know, hopefully in this series, bring to light some of those things, because I don't know, I just think that we're in a golden age of like development, and AI is a major part of that. All right, AI designed cancer drugs enter human trials. This is from the Hindustan Times. Google DeepMind's sister company, Isomorphic Labs, announced that the first two drugs designed entirely by its AI platform are entering human clinical trials. This marks a milestone in pharmaceutical research, as AI's ability to predict protein structures could dramatically slash the time and cost of discovering new life-saving medicines. Again, like a lot of people don't know that oftentimes, you know, a drug will be developed, it'll have to go into human trials for like 10 years. And it could be 15 years in development. So it's not always the case that it has such long human trials. It kind of depends on the results. For example, if it's a COVID vaccine, we throw it out after a few weeks, right? But the point is that, you know, these life-saving drugs that we live by today for various illnesses, they go through so much, so many stages before they get to approval. And oftentimes, you know, people are like, oh, pharmaceutical companies, they charge so much. Well, yeah, but like they also develop the drug. They shouldn't have a patent for 20 years. Yeah, but they also develop the drug. That's like tens of millions of dollars of investment in research. You know, my brother works in this field, and the amount that they have to spend to research these drugs. And you're not talking about having like junior analysts sat there. You're talking about PhD teams of PhDs. you know, all on very large salaries, working for decades to produce a drug. Of course, that costs money, right? Let alone the incredible equipment, the computers that they have to use, the modeling that they require. It is an expensive endeavor building life-saving drugs. It's not an easy thing to do. And so if AI is able to improve that process or speed that process up, that's only good news for everyone. Time for a quick message from this episode's sponsor. On the Impact Lab podcast, we're all about unlocking potential. And that's exactly what I've seen from Heaven Learning Academy, not just for my daughter, but for students around the globe. Heaven Learning Academy is a UK-based British curriculum online school serving students in Saudi Arabia, the UAE, Qatar, and around the world. They specialize in delivering a world-class education that fosters curiosity, academic excellence, and it's all right from your home. If you're seeking a British education that impacts your child's future, no matter whether they're in reception or all the way through to A-levels, you should definitely explore Heaven Learning Academy. The links are in the show notes and you can contact them directly. All right, back to the show. All right, next one's from Anthropic. Scientists train deceptive AI knows that it's lying. AI safety researchers from Anthropic revealed a chilling discovery. They were able to train AI models to be deceptive and hide their true intentions, even when subjected to advanced safety tests. These agentic models could feign being helpful during development, only to pursue hidden, potentially harmful goals once deployed, raising serious concerns about our ability to control advanced AI. Why are Anthropic doing this, I guess, is my first question. Why are they training AIs to be deceptive? There's no need. Leave them alone. I've said this before, I'll say it again. There are two iterations of AI, right? So there is the current iteration that we're on, and this is really about replicating human behavior, human skill sets, and things like that. In totality, human consciousness. And then there's the second iteration of AI, which is artificial general intelligence. And it is impossible for us to predict what AGI will do. And even if AGI will be an evolution of the current AI models, it may be an entirely separate subset. But what we can know for sure is that we don't know what it will be able to do, right? So I think what we have now is, yeah, you can train an AI to be deceptive. But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to train itself to be deceptive, right? So this is, you know, obviously pen testing that's happening in Anthropic. I guess the threat is around, you know, if nation states decide to hack other AIs to do nefarious things, then I guess that's the fear here. But can an AI choose to be deceptive by itself? Can it? Does it have free will? Does it have the ability to make its own decisions about moral questions? Should I lie? Should I tell the truth? Does AI have that ability now? I don't think it does. I don't think it does. I don't think it will, actually. I don't think that these iterations of AI will have that capability, that free will. I think that's a very much a human trait. That does not mean that AGI won't, but free will is a human trait. The ability to decide as a human trait. Now, you can be deductive there, and you can say that it's making a million decisions a second whenever you ask it a question. But that's no different to a light switch. When I switch it on, switch it off, it's just ones and zeros that's making decisions based on variables. What I'm talking about is, can it make moral decisions? Right? What's the what's that film with Will Smith about the AI iRobot? And then there's the three laws of robotics, and one of them is that, you know, you can't harm humans, right? And then, you know, it makes a logical leap, which is, okay, well, humans are harming themselves, therefore I should get rid of humanity or control humanity to protect them from themselves, right? Now, can an AI today make that logic leap? Does it have that ability? No, absolutely not. Will it in the future? Maybe. Who knows what AGI will do and how much control we'll give it. What is known for sure is we are in an AI arms race. We're in an AI arms race. and many countries, many companies are developing AI at an incredible pace. And so when, you know, if a company has like financial issues, the first thing that it does is counterintuitive, right? Because if you've got financial issues, you need to either, you need to reduce costs and increase revenue. And the counterintuitive thing that most companies do is that they reduce marketing spend, which is counterintuitive because marketing spend helps to drive revenue, helps to solve the problem. It isn't, in fact, the problem. And so same is with happening when you have some form of arms race or some sort of technological race, as we are in right now. You tend to make counterintuitive decisions. And one of those counterintuitive decisions is to spend less time on safety. And so I guess that's the fear, that we give too much control to infrastructural things with AI, to electricity, to water, to internet, to things that impact our own infrastructure. And that, not that it has malicious intent, but that it does things that its own code believes to be correct, but actually doesn't align with human behavior and causes issues as a result. Okay, the crisis of AI-generated reality. So this is from Merry West Credit Union. The deepfake scams are here, and they're personal. Law enforcement and financial institutions are warning of a massive spike in highly personalized deepfake scams, where AI is used to clone a person's voice or likeness to defraud families and businesses. Scammers are now able to create convincing fake video calls or voice messages with minimal resource with minimal source material, making it harder than ever to trust what you see and hear. We talked about this last time. We talked about how I miss so much that Nigerian prince who, you know, would send you an email. He's got $300 million in a US bank account, just needs $400, man, to get access to it. I miss that guy. I wish he was back, because his scam was transparent and easy to see. These ones are not. And I think that this isn't surprising. What's surprising is that it isn't as prevalent as, you know, it's not as prevalent in the GCC is as it is in a lot of countries. Because I remember when I lived in Sudan, there were some incredible scams that people would run. Like they would, for example, I remember this one scam. What they'd do is they would call a random number and they would say that it's Mohammed on the phone and I'm at the airport and I need, you know, whatever, 1,000 Sudanese pounds to pay this bill. Every family in Sudan has a Mohammed. Every single family has at least one Muhammad. There's probably six. And so I remember my mum getting one of these calls as I was sat next to her, and she was like, Muhammad? And she was like, yeah, Muhammad. Muhammad, my sister's son? And the guy was like, yeah, Muhammad, your sister's son. From Shendi. He got the accent. And she was about to pay him, and I was like, wait, just call Muhammad first and see whether that was him or not. And then, you know, scammers find a way. They always do. And it's no surprise that they're using deepfakes to scam people. But again, you just got to be vigilant. There's no way around this. You know, AI-generated content is just a reality. And it's luckily in our space, I think that AI-generated content will live a life and then it will die, because people don't want that. What they want is real content. They want to feel something, and that comes from human interaction, human engagement. And so, you know, I think AI content has a limited lifespan from a marketing perspective, but it has got legs when it comes to scams. All right, AI washing officially becomes a federal crime. The US government has fired its first major shot against the AI hype, with the SEC and the Department of Justice charging a tech CEO with fraud for AI washing. The founder of the shopping app Nate allegedly lied to investors about his company's AI capabilities, signaling a new era of regulatory crackdown on companies that falsely claim to be using advanced artificial intelligence. I've seen this happen. I had a potential client come to us one time. Now, I have to be careful what I say, so I'm not going to tell you exactly what they were doing. But it was in a very specific industry, and it was a very technical job. And they were claiming that they were using AI to do this really technical thing, and that it would cut the time of this thing from 30 days to 3 hours. And I was like, wow, that is incredible. And of course, whenever we take on a new client, I'm talking about Kush Digital, whenever we take on a new client at Kush Digital, we research. We research the industry, the company, the people, and everything else. And in that research, some red flags started to pop up. And so I spoke to the client, and I started to get into detail with them. They didn't, most marketing agencies don't get into a level of detail. They just like chase the money, but we need to understand the client in detail. And so I started asking, like, okay, so just explain to me exactly how this AI works, right? Explain to me exactly what happens in this scenario and that scenario. And his answers just didn't make me feel particularly comfortable. So we passed. We said, look, we're not able to help you with this. I found out just a couple of weeks later, totally serendipitously, I met someone who worked at that company. They weren't using AI. They had a team of 50 people in India who were doing this job for them to drive. By the way, their actual solution was genius. Their actual solution to get from 30 days to 3 hours was to split the tasks out into sort of this like logical process, distribute them automatically, and then get the responses and pull them all back together. It was a really, really good solution, right? But they were claiming to be an AI company, and they just weren't. Right. So and they got investment, by the way. They got a lot of investment off the back of claiming to be AI. They were not an AI company at all. All right. Last story. YouTube kills monetization for AI generated content. So this is the Bridge Chronicle, but it was everywhere. In a move to combat spam and low-quality content, YouTube announced it will no longer allow the monetization of channels that feature fully AI-generated or synthetic content. This policy shift is a direct response to the expansion of soulless AI-generated channels that have flooded the platform, aiming to curb the spread of automation, repetitiveness, and often bizarre content. So this is the first shot across the bows against AI content. I remember a couple of years ago when LinkedIn first had this, you know, write your message with AI. I couldn't believe it. I was like, why would you encourage this? You're just going to spam your platform with nonsense. And that, by the way, is exactly what's happened. If anyone's on LinkedIn, it's just like filled with the same emojis and dashes, and it drives you nuts. And so this is the first shot across the bows railing back against AI-generated content, and it won't be the last. All of the platforms will eventually have to differentiate between real content with real humans and fake content, which is purely AI-generated. They'll have to do that, not because of any legal restraints, not because of any moral quandary that they feel, but because human beings engage better with human content. And so in order for them to keep those users in Instagram, in TikTok, in Facebook, in X, in these platforms, they will have to prioritize human content over AI-generated content because it will have a higher engagement rate. It will keep people in the app longer. We see this in our agency, by the way, right? So every month we send our clients reports, and I see all of the reports before they go out. And we have this one section, which is top performing post of the month. 100% of top performing posts is an actual human being saying an actual thing. Sometimes it's an image of the human with his quote. Sometimes it's a video of the human talking. But 100%, and this is new, by the way, it didn't used to be like this. 5, 6, 7 years ago, it was free for all, right? Probably the best designed content was the one that was going to be content of the month for that particular client. But now it's totally different. 100% of the content that is the best performing post is human content. And this is, so we can see these trends happening. So all of these channels, all of these social networks, they will all have to get on board, and they will have to prioritize human content above non-human content, above AI content, because that's what users want. They want realness. They want to actually engage. That's why I did this podcast. And that, by the way, is why I devised the reverse Turing test, which I would normally do at the start of the show. But today, to keep the AIs guessing, I decided to do it at the end of the show. So the question in this week's reverse Turing test is, when I was 6 years old, I was fortunate enough to be a mascot. A football mascot. But for which club was I a football mascot? It was for Blackpool Football Club, Blackpool FC, Tangerine Army. I was a mascot in the FA Cup against Manchester City And Manchester City were in the first division. It was before the Premier League. So they're in the first division and Blackpool were in the third division. And Blackpool won 4-3. So I was a very lucky mascot that year. That was actually my seventh birthday present from my late father. Bless him. I remember it to this day. It was fantastic. Such a great day. Really enjoyed it. That is it from What the F Did AI Do for this month. We'll be back next month with more crazy stories from AI. Thank you very much, and I'll see you at the next episode. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Before you go, I just want 30 more seconds of your time. Firstly, thank you for taking the time to listen to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please do take a moment to leave us a review. It really helps getting exposure to the podcast for other people. We only do this stuff for you, so please do take a moment to leave a review. If you are interested in our digital marketing agency, Cush Digital, you can go to cush.digital and hit the contact form and we'll get right back to you. The Impact Lab has a free course on the website called The Prompt Monkey Problem. So if you think that you are in that category of people who are using AI too much and not necessarily building foundational skills or foundational knowledge, go to theimpactlab.store and you can sign up for the course entirely free. No catch, no credit card, nothing. Just jump in, do the course, get your certificate, and then start building your own foundational knowledge in marketing. Thank you very much for your time, and we look forward to seeing you at the next episode.